All right, everybody. Hello and welcome back to another episode of In Liberty and Health. Kind of looks like we got a little like latency issue, but hopefully that is tolerable and hopefully it doesn't look too bad on you guys' end. Hopefully everybody's doing well. I normally don't do two shows in the weekdays, but if the schedule permits, then I'll do it. I know it's a little bit earlier than I normally go live, but I figured I would get two shows in this week because unfortunately there will be no Sunday coffee this weekend because I will be at our dear friend Jazz's Rattleclack Studios recording New Common Crown. So hopefully you all are looking forward to that. I know I'm really looking forward to sharing this with everybody because I think some of the songs we got written are awesome. So I really can't wait to share this stuff with you. So just be on the lookout for that. But what are we going to be talking about today? We are going to be talking about all the news coming out of Israel, the Middle East, Trump, and if he's really splitting with Netanyahu. I'm skeptical, but things are looking better than they were, let's just say, going into the presidency and throughout the campaign. So lots to talk about today. I got a couple articles brought up. And of course, I want to talk about the allegations of Qatar buying off America. I have an article from Barry Weiss that we'll kind of breeze through. And it's pretty funny on its face, but there is some legitimacy to the claims, but also we shouldn't fly off the handle because if you've paid attention to the show for any period of time, then you know there's clearly another actor in the Middle East that has a lot more influence than Qatar. So before we get into today's show, please head to all the links below where you can find out more about me, everything I've got going on. Specifically, go to tigerfitness.com. I got my first, actually, ice shaker that I ever owned, my Tiger Fitness one. You can see it's pretty battle-worn, lots of scratches on it, but this thing does keep my water cold. I don't know if you can get these from Tiger Fitness anymore, but if not, go over to Ice Shaker and actually get one because I love having this thing. But I drink my branched-chain amino acids, which you can get from tigerfitness.com. Use code Kyle at checkout. All that good stuff. Fox & Sons Coffee, deemed fit through the link below. And without further ado, guys, let's get into the rest of today's show.
Lowe's knows that no matter your paint project, saving is at the top of your list. That's why when you shop today, you can buy one, get one free select Valspar and HGTV Home by Sherwin-Williams one coat coverage interior paints via rebate. Shop these deals in-store or online today at Lowe's. We help, you save. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. Discount taken at time of purchase. See sales associate for details. Offer valid 8/21 through 9/3.
And welcome back, everybody. Look at that. You could definitely tell this thing's seen better days. It's fallen off of my toolbox more times than I can count. But anyways, hopefully everybody's doing well. Hopefully you guys enjoyed Tuesday evening's show. I know it got a little hot between Red Hawk and maybe some people who were commenting. But, you know, it's all in good fun. We can have good faith disagreements and all that good stuff. Although I'm definitely closer to his position than I was perhaps a year ago. But yeah, go check out that show with Red Hawk. I thought that was a lot of fun. It's always a good time to talk to him and always good to catch up with him, even when we're not just doing Post Zero or Rule Zero. Which, speaking of that, as I said in the introduction, there will be no Sunday coffee. I will not be on Post Zero or Rule Zero this weekend because not only do I have to work, but also working on New Common Crown, as I said earlier in the introduction. So like I said, I'm really looking forward to sharing all this stuff because A Common Crown is just doing really, really well. And we are now opening for, I think it's a Guns N' Roses tribute band at Jurgles on June 23rd. So that's going to be a lot of fun as well. June is a very, 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 very busy month for me. I'm already starting to book some guests for next month. I already have all my guests lined up for the rest of this month. So the show is very, very busy, doing very, very well. Common Crown's doing well. Life is fucking good, guys. Life is excellent, and I hope it is for all you guys as well. So today's topic is Trump fixing the U.S.-Middle East relations? Lots to talk about, lots going on here. My initial thoughts as of this past weekend are that it's good that Trump is engaging in diplomacy. Sorry, I can't get that word out. But lots of diplomacy going on between the Middle East and leaving out Israel, which is odd to say the least, odd in a good way. And then some of the trade talks with China, I think, are great. Talks with Iran are great. And then also like the ceasefire conversation going around Russia and Ukraine, I think that's great as well. So it's kind of surprising, and I don't think it's working out quite the way that a lot of people thought it would, that Trump seems more serious, at least at this point, of getting peace in the Middle East, or at least Witkoff, than he is about Ukraine, Russia, where I think a lot of people thought that it would have been more straightforward with Russia and Ukraine versus Israel, where I think a lot of people assumed, and me in this camp as well, that Trump was just going to be let Netanyahu and Israel do whatever they want in Gaza, where it seems kind of like he's still kind of letting them do what they want, but he's also not going to get on board with escalating with Iran, which I think is the right move, and I think that is a good thing. As I talked about with Sarah from DD Geopolitics on here, Trump really doesn't have any leverage over Russia. What's he going to do? Give him some sanctions relief, or, you know, not send in weapons to Ukraine? I don't know what the plan is there, and it really doesn't seem like there's any kind of plan. And this kind of goes to the bigger picture of multipolarity, where I know some people don't like to think of the world this way, but I mean, the fact is that the U.S. isn't the dominant global superpower anymore, at least not the sole dominant global superpower anymore. Russia and China have their own interests. They have their own sphere of influence, or, you know, their sphere of interest and influence. And also, they don't really have to sit here and give a shit what the U.S. says anymore. It's unfortunate that it's that way, but, you know, the U.S. has really done a lot to destroy itself over the last 20 years. And China and Russia are no longer just kind of third world shitholes, if you will. They have some real economic and military might that they seek to use, and they seek to use the influence to their benefit. I think Sarah and I kind of talked about this as well, that, you know, Putin was kind of dragging around Trump and the administration. It was almost like a dog and pony show with this whole peace deal process. They really don't have any reason to pursue peace if they don't want peace in Ukraine. Because Russia has, you know, all the cards, essentially. I know that Trump, you know, said Zelensky doesn't have the cards, but really the U.S. doesn't have the cards over Russia anymore. So basically this war ends when Putin decides it ends. And Trump really, he hasn't gone about ending it, or at least trying to end it in a smart way at all. Like this whole minerals deal of us getting the minerals from Ukraine, granted they didn't get security guarantees, this still kind of ties us into Ukraine, and I just don't think we should be tied in with them at all. So I know I didn't plan to talk about Russia and Ukraine, but I feel like that's just kind of necessary to put out there. Now, getting over to the U.S. Middle East stuff, it's been very interesting, and there's been a lot of speculation. And the way I kind of posed it was, I think that there's either one of two things that are happening right now. And if I'm being honest, I think it's going to be the less optimistic one, as much as I hate to say that. And I hope I'm proven wrong, but I kind of think that this is where this is landing. The first 30 days under the Trump administration were honestly pretty good. And I was almost to the point that I was like, you know what? I kind of wish I would have went and voted for Trump. I'm still not there yet. Maybe I'll change my mind. But the first 30 days were pretty awesome, if I'm being honest. You know, lots of the executive orders were things that I think any right-leaning person would agree with. Removing of birthright citizenship, the ceasefire in Gaza, lots of diplomacy with China. I think that's good. Excuse me. The rhetoric just around the border, change the amount of immigration coming in alone. There was a lot of good stuff that kind of went on in those first 30 days, and also talk of like abolishing a lot of departments and then shutting down USAID. Now, granted, that's been rolled over in the State Department, and they're still kind of doing shady shit with that. There were definitely good things that came out of the first 30 days. Now, granted, after that, it seemed like a lot of that momentum had kind of went away, specifically like around when it came time to kind of sign some of these DOGE cuts into, you know, the official budget. All of a sudden, Thomas Massie's the asshole for wanting to actually sign that budget into law, which, if you ask me, didn't really make a lot of sense. But hey, you know, I'm not the man on the hill here. I'm just some podcaster who just, or I'm some mechanic who just so happens to have a podcast as well. So from day 30 to 100, and obviously I'm not being, I'm being a little hyperbolic, but basically once it seemed like the high kind of came down from Trump winning and from the overwhelming Trump victory, he lost a lot of that momentum. And, you know, it just seemed like it was kind of back to business as usual. So whenever this whole deal came out where they're saying that Trump hung up on Netanyahu and he cut communications with him, I think a lot of that, if I'm being honest, was just the Trump media machine kind of playing up Trump's hand to try and make him look really good because the first 100 days, I don't want to say we're a complete total failure, but they really started to fail to live up to expectations. We're hearing all this stuff of, you know, how Trump's we're going back into a golden age. Okay, well, it didn't quite seem like that after the first 100 days. So there's so many MAGA slop and honestly QAnon accounts. And I know this sounds nuts, but like, if you look through some of these accounts, the Megatron Ron, DC Drano, they're literally QAnon accounts that just put out slop about Trump, about how he's a savior and stuff like this. And like, you can like Trump. I don't have a problem with that, but like this religious devotion that some people have to believing in Trump is just like wacky to me. I'm not that way, in case you guys can't tell. I praise Trump when I think it's necessary, and I take away from him when I think it's necessary as well. So I think a lot of this kind of does boil down to kayfabe and just trying to spin Trump again to get people back on the Trump train and quit criticizing him as much, because he's failing on Doge and a lot of like these government overhaul that like I think a lot of people wanted him to do. The other option is that there's legitimately some shit going down, and I think that's somewhat true, but I'm still kind of on the side that like I'm pretty skeptical to believe that Trump's leaving Israel behind, because we have a dedicated policy record of Trump being very, very deferential and supportive of Israel. Eddie, good to see you as always. And Moldy Apple, hopefully this is real, not just a show for the blowback he has gotten for teasing more war. I hate to say it. I think this is just kind of him trying to throw a bone to the base and get everybody to be off his back. Could it be that he's really turning the cold cheek on Netanyahu? Maybe. I have some friends that have been on the show that do believe that him and Netanyahu are arch nemesis and they really don't like each other, but usually the only evidence that's ever granted for that is a 4-year-old article. Let's just say I'm not really hanging my hat on that. I would believe it if he was a lot less deferential to Israel and didn't take all this money from Miriam Adelson, who, you know, is obviously very tight with Netanyahu as well. Very hesitant to believe that. If there's more evidence that popped up, okay, maybe, but let's just say I'm not convinced. So before I run into the first article I wanted to cover, and it's going to be from Bloomberg, I'm going to play an ad for you guys real quick, and I will be right back.
All right, we're going to take a second a day to chill and tell you about the show's sponsors, Tiger Fitness. Make sure you go to the link below to get all the supplements that I use day in, day out, and beyond. As I always say, you do not need supplements to become all jacked and tan or to progress in your health journey, but they could definitely be a useful tool in that respect. So as you can see on tigerfitness.com, we got MTS Nutrition, Blackstone Labs, Ambrosia, HPN, Nutrix Research, America Labs, Alani Nu, Pump Chasers, there's Redcon One, Accent Sledge, plenty of different companies that pretty much have absolutely any supplement you could possibly think of. Pre-workouts, fat burners, BCAAs, electrolyte mixes, you name it, it's on there. So go to Tiger Fitness through the link below. Use code Kyle at checkout to let them know that I sent you. Get your protein powder, you name it, anything that's going to help you stick to your diet and hopefully achieve your health goals. All right, thanks. Back to the show.
All right. Hey, Meta Prime, good to see you, man. I know I said I was going to read a Bloomberg article, but actually during that commercial, Dave DeCamp had shared this article, and I am now, this is going to kind of change my perspective for the rest of the show. So from the Times of Israel, from the Times of Israel, Witkoff told mediators U.S. not planning to force Israel to end the Gaza war. Arab sources tell Trump envoy currently working to coax Hamas to release smaller number of hostages than what Israel has been demanding, hoping to meet parties halfway. Since hostage talks between Israel and Hamas resumed in Doha on Wednesday, U.S. Special Envoy to the Middle East, Steve Witkoff, has told other mediators that Washington doesn't plan to force Israel to end the war in Gaza amid Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's staunch refusal to do so, two Arab officials told the Times of Israel on Thursday. So it's kind of crazy because, you know, there was a lot of talk that Trump was really starting to push Netanyahu. Looks like that's not really a big deal. Gage, has the money and weapons stopped flowing in Israel? That's why I don't believe so. Between family ties, people in his administration, his donors, I don't think Trump is separating from Israel. Yeah, I completely agree. Jacob, good to see you, brother. I feel like I never want to make any take on Trump because it'll look wrong tomorrow or midstream. You know what, dude? And that's literally what just happened. And that's why I'm reading this article now. Let's just say I was a lot more optimistic until I literally saw this article, you know, when I was just browsing Twitter real quick from the, commercials. So, granted, I don't think that, it was ever going to be significant pressure on the U.S. or on Israel to end the war, but, yeah, Qatari and Egyptian mediators had hoped that the U.S. would move in this direction, given comments from President Donald Trump and other top aides about their desire to end the war following Hamas's Monday release of American Israeli hostage Eden Alexander. And you know what? I do want to give credit where it's due because, let's face it, if Joe Biden or Kamala Harris had won, I don't think there's a single person who would honestly say or even be close to right in saying that Kamala Harris or Joe Biden would have pressured Netanyahu to do any of this. You think Anthony Blinken is going to pressure anybody to do anything? I don't know who Biden's envoy to the Middle East was. I'm sure if somebody told me in the comments, the name would ring familiar right away. But there is no way that anybody in the Biden administration would have ever pressured Israel like this. Now, granted, this is very, very light pressure. This isn't them ramming a fist up Netanyahu's rectum to feel the colon cancer that he has. This is them just the light touch of toilet paper, something like that. But anyways, Steve Witkoff, I do think, is a net good in the administration. And I do appreciate that he's at least pushing for something, like some good is coming out of this. Yeah, exactly. It's always 500 D chess. Back to the article here. Netanyahu has insisted on only agreeing to a temporary ceasefire of roughly 45 days, which still is better than nothing, which would begin with Hamas releasing about 10 hostages. During that time, he told Witkoff that Israel is prepared to hold talks on a permanent end of the war without committing to such a result up front, the first Arab official said. And once again, to this, you know, it is kind of like they negotiated the ceasefire in the first 30 days, but then, of course, that all fell apart. Israel was never pressured to go to the second stage of the ceasefire. Accordingly, Hamas has insisted on an upfront Israeli commitment to end the war before it releases additional hostages. It also issued a statement on Thursday warning of harm to the talks if Israel doesn't end its nearly 2.5-month-long blockade on aid entering Gaza. Israel has accused Hamas of stealing too much of the aid that was previously brought in. I'm sure there's some truth to this, but I think they're probably playing this up because, let's face it, they don't want to end the war. Due to both sides' intransigence, hopefully I said that right. I'm supposed to be the smart guy here, but Witkoff has offered a proposal that tries to meet the sides halfway. One that would see the release of a smaller number of hostages in exchange for a weeks-long truce, the two Arab officials said. The Trump envoy has also tried to assure Hamas through mediators that the U.S. will make sure that this time Israel does not enter talks regarding terms of a permanent ceasefire. I'm sorry, let me read that again. The Trump envoy has also tried to assure Hamas through mediators that the U.S. will make sure that this time Israel does enter talks regarding terms of a permanent ceasefire. So basically, they're saying that they're going to make sure that they pressure Israel to go into to another phase of a ceasefire, which we'll see how much pressure they actually apply to Israel. My guess is probably not very much. The Arab officials said the sides remain far apart, but the American, Qatari, and Egyptian mediators are still looking to push them toward a compromise over the coming days. So this is obviously subject to change, but we'll just kind of have to see how this goes. Israel's pledged to launch a major military operation to reoccupy and hold on to the entire strip if Hamas doesn't accept this proposal for a temporary ceasefire by the time Trump wraps up his Middle East trip on Friday. But Arab mediators hope that the U.S. will convince Israel to at least hold off on the operation for several more days as they wait to determine the results of a Tuesday IDF strike targeting Hamas Gaza leader Mohammed Sinwar. Scores of civilians were also reportedly killed, according to Hamas, linked to the health officials in Gaza. Anybody who listens to Dave DeCamp's show, they've still killed, I think it's well in the hundreds of Palestinians since, you know, this whole supposed split between Netanyahu and Trump has happened. This is an open the gate, close the gate, open the gate a little situation. Yeah, that's kind of what it seems like. And I think anybody listening knows that obviously in this kind of negotiation, you're going to have some give and take. I just, with Gaza and Hamas really doesn't have a lot of leverage when Israel explicitly stated that this war is not about the hostages. If it's not about the hostages, then really it's just about whether or not Israel wants to go full bore or not. Right now, it seems like just like the fact that Trump is talking and mediating and negotiating, I think this is overall good, but it shows that they're still not applying any kind of serious pressure to them. Israeli officials have characterized Sinwar as a major obstacle in previous negotiations and hope that his elimination will lead to a Hamas compromise. But Israeli optimism that Sinwar was indeed killed has begun to wane, according to the second Arab official who's briefed on the matter. Arab leaders were also slated to gather for a summit in Baghdad on Saturday that will focus on Gaza, and we're hoping that the Israeli offensive wouldn't be launched during that confab, the second Arab official added. While they continue to follow Witkoff's lead in the negotiations, Qatar and Egypt believe that the strategy should be to push both sides towards a permanent end of the war, the first Arab official said. And that's obviously, you know, what we're really hoping for here. Hamas has already agreed to forego governing control of the Strip, and at least five Arab countries are still prepared to take part in the post-war management of Gaza and what they would argue would lead to the gradual disarmament of Hamas, the Arab official said, acknowledging that it would require an invitation from the Palestinian Authority, which Netanyahu has refused to accommodate. So, yeah, I mean, obviously, one of their main goals with this whole military operation is the disarmament and the elimination of Hamas. As we could see, that has not worked well at all. It's unfortunate, but I think that really the best way to get them to end this war would just to be to stop slaughtering people willy-nilly. And, you know, if you really had to go in there and kill people, then small, you know, infantry groups that you send in on foot, it's going to be risky. But obviously, when you do this kind of military operation, you risk not only a wider war, which they're already engaged in, but also you risk creating more terrorists, essentially. And that's exactly what they've done. So if the creation of the political horizon for the Palestinians is absent, demands for a permanent Hamas disarmament would not be met, the Arab official asserted. Witkoff largely agrees with the Arab approach and told hostages' families that last week that the Netanyahu government's plan to massively expand the war will not be effective, according to a source present for the discussion. When he was pressed during another meeting with the families on Tuesday on why the U.S. was not willing to force Netanyahu to end the war, Witkoff responded, "We're not the Israeli government. The Israeli government is a sovereign government. They can't tell us what to do, and we can't tell them what to do." Well, that's pretty widely debated. And granted, I think I covered this a couple weeks ago, but basically, Netanyahu really wanted Trump and the U.S. military to go to war with Iran. They didn't do it. So, I mean, I know a lot of people say that Trump is controlled by Israel. I definitely think that he is influenced by Israel, but to say that he's controlled by Israel, I think is a little bit far-fetched. I don't think there's 100% truth there. There's definitely a grain of truth, but it's not the whole truth. Witkoff's office did not respond to a request for comment on the story. Hamas has proposed releasing all the hostages at once in exchange for an end of the war, but Netanyahu has rejected this trade, arguing that it would leave Hamas in power. Once again, you got to come to some kind of compromise here. Successive polls have indicated that the premier is out of step with the majority of Israelis who back such a framework, but Netanyahu is also facing pressure from his far-right coalition partners who have threatened to collapse the government if he were to end the war in exchange for the remaining 58 hostages, between 20 and 23 of whom are still believed to be alive. Well, you know, a lot more would be alive if you quit just bombing the ever-living shit out of the Gaza Strip. I know. insane idea. Insurgent math also applies even if they were doing ethnic cleansing. Yeah, exactly. All you're going to do is build more ethnic resentment amongst the Palestinians and then even more Arabs, because let's face it here. I wouldn't want the entire population of the Gaza Strip here in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. I wouldn't want that. Now, granted, the Palestinians are more ethnically similar to that of Qatar, Egypt, Syria, wherever you want to say in the Middle East. That doesn't mean that they have the infrastructure or even the desire to take in all these people. So what do you think is going to happen when you ethnically cleanse, you know, what is it, 2 million Palestinians out of Gaza and send them to other Arab areas? They're probably not going to like Israel very much, and it's going to radicalize them even more. And if you think anti-Semitism is bad now, wait till you see, Israel ethnically cleanse a strip of people, send them to different Arab areas, and then tell us that we have to fight a war on behalf of Israel to, combat Iran because there's this global threat of anti-Semitism. Imagine that. It wouldn't go well. So I got another story. This is the story from Bloomberg, and I just wanted to cover this. Now, granted, I think this is just seeing this story now kind of gives a little bit more context to this. So, and this article seems to be pretty pro-Israel. So now America's relationship with Israel is really in trouble. Published yesterday at about 5 a.m. Donald Trump is dissing Benjamin Netanyahu, not for the greater cause of Zionism, but for himself. This is a bad week for Israel, and by all appearances, that's just fine with the U.S. president. I really wish it was. Like the former reality TV star that he is, Donald Trump has choreographed several plot lines to send a single message. He will do whatever he thinks will redound to his own glory, even that means freezing out Benjamin Netanyahu. They make him sound so much more base than he really is. Man, I really wish he would just cut off Israel cold turkey. I think that's what we all want. It's hardly a coincidence that Hamas, the terrorist organization that Israel has been pounding in the Gaza Strip since October 2023, released its last living hostage bearing a U.S. passport just as Trump set off to the Middle East on a trip that includes three Arab countries but conspicuously omits Israel. I'm going to cut in here. I think it's a good thing that he's leaving out Israel because, once again, Israel has a little bit of a motivation to cut out the rest of these Arab countries, specifically Iran, and obviously, if you can call Palestine a country, they're not really. But the fact that Trump and his envoy and his administration are negotiating directly with Iran, Qatar, Egypt, and Hamas is just good. It's good. And I really don't think you would see this out of a Biden administration. So obviously, credit where it's due. This is good. This is progress. Do I think there's going to be a major change in the U.S.-Israeli relationship? No, I just don't. If there is, I'll be the first one to praise it. You'll see me on Twitter singing Trump's praises if he does. But I think that this may be a brick in a long road, or it may just be a little hiccup in this whole situation here. But if I'm being honest, I just think this is a little hiccup in the road here. So continuing on in the article. In March, his administration had rejected a similar offer from Hamas, deferring to the Israeli fear of being cut out of the negotiations and disadvantaging two dozen other hostages still believed to be alive. This time, the U.S. didn't care. And the other thing, and I know people have covered this on their shows, and if you pay attention, you've seen about this, but this one U.S. hostage. I don't know what happened there, but let me get this all back up. I apologize for that. Hopefully that didn't mess us up too bad. Share screen. Israel. Here we go. Oh, did it die on Twitter? Am I still live on Twitter? Let's see. Sorry, guys. Okay, yeah, I'm still live on Twitter. Good, 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 good. I'm just not seeing any. Yeah, Mossad got me. I don't know what happened. it was a similar story last week when Trump abruptly announced that the U.S. would stop bombing the Houthis in Yemen. We hit them very hard, the president said. They gave us their word that they wouldn't shoot or be shooting ships anymore, and we honor that. Left unsaid was the Houthis had just fired missiles at Ben Gurion Airport near Tel Aviv, and that hadn't consulted, the Israeli Prime Minister. Well, my understanding is, and my buddy Nico House did a whole hotspot on this, where basically Trump had, I think it cost the U.S. $30 billion to bomb the Houthis. So at a certain point, if it costs you that much money and you're losing all this money to just basically fight off a ragtag group of Arabs in Yemen, probably just stop. And there's probably an easier way around it. And honestly, the way it was is that they had a mutual interest in just not fighting anymore. Trump also blindsided Netanyahu in dealing with Tehran. Bibi insists on completely dismantling Iran's nuclear operations and wants to bomb its centrifuges and other facilities with U.S. help. Trump wants to avoid war and be feted as a peacemaker, ideally with a Nobel Peace Prize. I want to make a deal with Iran, Trump repeated on Tuesday to Netanyahu's chagrin. If I can make a deal with Iran, I'll be very happy. And it's so funny, and people have said this ad nauseum, and you've seen the Tim Kaste-style libertarians lament the Iran deal, but Trump is essentially trying to get back into the Iran deal after he tore it up in his first administration, because basically it wasn't Trump that authored the Iran deal. The Iran deal was fine. It gave sanctions relief, and then it also kept uranium enrichment at less than like 5%, which they're all the way up to like 63% now. They need 93% uranium to make a nuclear weapon, and right now, even the State Department, who is stacked with hawks, is saying that, yeah, we're not going to enrich uranium, or that Iran's not enriching uranium enough to actually develop a nuclear weapon. So even in Syria, Trump and Netanyahu administrations may be at odds. Israel has been bombing military targets in the country, even as Damascus struggles to build a viable state after the tyranny of Bashar al-Assad. Trump, however, is planning to meet Syria's new and controversial leader, Ahmed al-Shara, in Saudi Arabia this week, and he said he will lift sanctions against the state, which is the right move. Trump did apply the Caesar Act sanctions, which were just brutal sanctions on Syria for starving the population. So this is the right move regardless. Then there's the agenda for Trump's visit to Saudi Arabia, Qatar, and the United Arab Emirates. He still takes enormous pride in brokering the Abraham Accords when several Muslim nations, including the Emiratis, normalized relations with Israel. His successor and predecessor, Joe Biden, then tried but failed to reach a similar agreement with Saudi Arabia, offering Riyadh security guarantees and a civilian nuclear technology in return for Saudi recognition of Israel. Such strategic sweep is lacking this time around. Basically, Trump is going around brokering with other Arab nations, much to the dismay of Netanyahu and the Israelis, which I'm all about it. To please Trump, these monarchies are instead building new Trump towers, bringing golf tournaments to his courses, and doing brisk business with his family and crypto ventures. They've also announced huge investments in the U.S. The Qatari royals have even offered to donate an unusually luxurious Boeing 747-8 that Trump can turn into Air Force One and later transfer to his presidential library. They clearly know how to flatter him. In return, Trump may still offer the Saudis that civilian nuclear technology just without the reciprocal recognition of Israel. And this is kind of what people have been talking about all along. Trump is negotiating with Tehran and the Saudis without Israel and without considering Israel. This is a little unusual, but also we don't know how long this is going to be and if Trump will just pick up the phone when he gets home and then basically green light whatever they want to do. And let's not forget, Trump already gave Israel $12 billion this year already. So it's not like, you know, the money spigot has been turned off. It's still on as far as, you know, we all know. And I don't see that changing. Trump has figured out that Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman couldn't embrace Israel even if he wanted to. After all, Netanyahu's right-wing government is tormenting the Saudis' Arab brethren in Palestine with plans to annex the West Bank and to permanently occupy Gaza, flattening its remaining buildings and relocating 2 million of its residents. The United Nations warns that 1 in 5 Gazans is at risk of starving. And so far, Trump really doesn't seem against the flattening of Gaza. I mean, he pays some lip service and says he wished they'd be treated better, but he ultimately doesn't really do anything. Trump hasn't said much about this unfolding disaster. He may think he can stop he can't stop Netanyahu anyway and doesn't want to be associated with the catastrophe. If so, that's another sign that Trump, unlike Biden, is not a true friend of Israel, which I just don't know how they could say that he's not. You know, I think that Trump does, to a, perhaps a small degree, look at the war in the war in Gaza and think like, man, I just don't want to be part of this. This is a mess. But he also realizes that the U.S. is so intertwined that it would be a disaster for him to try to pull out. Biden was shaped by his conversations with Israeli leaders since Golda Meir. He had a vision of Israel one day living in peace next to a sovereign Palestine. I don't know about that. He understood that Israel under Netanyahu instead risks becoming an international pariah that gradually loses its democratic soul. So he kept prodding Bibi in vain to change course. For that effort, the Republicans pounce on Biden for not being sufficiently pro-Israel, which is just hilarious. There was no pressure on Israel the entire time that Biden was put in. There was lip service to pressure being put on, but none really. Trump instead pretends to be a Zionist when it suits him and costs him nothing, with performative gestures such as moving the U.S. embassy to Jerusalem in his first term. He's never disavowed the two-state solution, which has been U.S. policy for decades, nor has he done much to bring it closer. Sorry. Instead, he recently posted, he recently surprised the visiting Netanyahu along with everybody else by announcing the U.S. would quote-unquote own Gaza and turn in the Riviera of the Middle East. Now that Netanyahu plans to occupy the strip, Trump seems to have dropped the idea, which basically a lot of people have kind of posited that this is a plan to just force the Palestinians out. We'll see. There are two splits in the making here, one personal and the other historic. The personal rift is between two men who are too similar to build a lasting relationship. Trump and Netanyahu are egotistical and solipsistic leaders who callously conflate their own fate, including their prospects of staying out of court, with that of their nations. The historic rupture consists of the U.S. letting an old and close friend, Israel, become ever more isolated in the world. For decades, Israel's national interests factored into Americans. Now they're diverging. Biden should have broken with Bibi to save Zionism, but he didn't have the courage. Trump is indeed dissing Netanyahu, but not for the sake of Israel. He's doing it for himself. Boy, I love the way they make him sound. I really, really do. I don't know if it's legit, but we'll see. So there was a comment. I won't read the article because I don't have access to it, but there was a comment that I'm sure you guys probably saw that Netanyahu said that the U.S. should, that Israel should perhaps wean off of the U.S.'s support. Buddy, I wish. I wish. I don't think that's going to happen, but sure is a nice thought. Sounds pretty nice. So let's close out with this. Hopefully you guys aren't bored and hopefully this has been entertaining. Oh, come on. Enter your email and receive our daily newsletter. Yeah, you know what? We'll just read the free part of it. Let me present this. Share this tab instead. The Qataris, those damn Qataris. How Qatar bought America. The tiny Gulf nation has spent almost $100 billion to establish its influence in Congress, universities, newsrooms, think tanks, corporations. But what does it want in return? By Franny Block and Jay Solomon. So I'm not familiar with these two writers. I'm guessing they're probably crazy Zionists. But on Wednesday, Donald Trump will travel to Qatar. On his trip, the president will sit, visit Al Udeid Air Base, the largest American military facility in the region, and attend meetings with the ruling Al Thani family. Perhaps he will also thank them for the $400 million gift of luxury Boeing 747 jumbo jet that will reportedly be retrofitted for his use and then transferred to his presidential library. Okay, so for all the Spurgs that are going to say, oh, well, what about Qatar? What about Qatar? Yes, this is wrong. Yes, they shouldn't be meddling in our domestic politics. But like, say that Qatar is a major player here is just, let's be honest, it's ridiculous when obviously Israel, you know, meddles so much more in our internal politics than Qatar could ever hope to. And maybe that'll change. But either way, I don't think anybody serious agrees that Qatar should be funding this kind of stuff. The airplane deal was signed off by General Pam Bondi. She used to work at Washington, D.C. lobbying firm that received $115,000 a month from Qatar to fight human trafficking, according to a 2019 contract reviewed by the Free Press. So yeah, once again, shouldn't happen. It's bullshit. She's not the only one in the administration with ties to the Persian Gulf state. President's chief of staff, Susie Wiles, led lobbying firm Mercury Public Affairs when it represented Qatar's embassy in Washington. FBI Director Kash Patel worked as a consultant for Qatar, though he didn't register as a foreign agent. Well, there's another country that doesn't have to register under FARA, aka a foreign agent, and that's Israel. But of course, they never bring that up. And there's Steve Witkoff, President Trump's longtime friend and senior advisor, who's accompanying him on his trip for this week. For months now, Witkoff has served as Trump's special envoy to the Middle East, and his name has been floated as a future national security advisor. Please, that'd be much better than Mike Waltz and definitely better than Marco Rubio. Witkoff also happens to be a beneficiary of Qatar's largesse. In 2023, Qatar's sovereign wealth fund bought out his faltering investment in New York's Park Lane Hotel for $623 million. And once again, this is assuming that everything in this article is true. I don't know if it is or isn't, not fact checked, but I'm just reading you what Barry Weiss, of all people, had shared. Let me read this comment real quick. Trump is acting this way for his Middle Eastern trip, I think. Or maybe it's all bad press on social media about Israel. Maybe he wants to distance himself. Regardless, he wants to stop the flow of cash and, he won't stop the flow of cash and bombs. Yeah, exactly. Getting back to the article. Meanwhile, Trump Organization is hard at work planning a new luxury golf resort near Qatar's capital in Doha, in partnership with a Qatari company. Trump's son, Donald Trump Jr., will speak next week at the invitation-only Qatar Economic Forum in a session titled Investing in America. So, like I said, obviously all this stuff shouldn't be happening. We shouldn't have foreign countries kind of lobbying and doing all this stuff on behalf of a foreign government. But it's just so nuts. It's so crazy that they're seriously flowing this out as like a bigger deal than all the Israeli money. And they're dead silent on all that. If you're a casual reader of these facts, an ordinary American who doesn't think much about the Middle East after America's traumatic wars of the 2000s, you would think Qatar is a top American ally, a trustworthy partner, and a key hub of international commerce, a country in good enough standing that the president of the United States would use its plane as Air Force One. The thing I know I want to say, which I completely forgot here a couple minutes ago, was basically that Qatar is home to one of the largest air bases for the U.S. in the Middle East. So, of course, there's going to be a little bit of a back and forth, right? I'm not saying that makes it right, but I'm just explaining. But Qatar's also a seat of the Muslim Brotherhood, a crucial source of financing to Hamas, a diplomatic and energy partner of Iran, a refuge for the Taliban's exiled political leadership, a financier and cheerleader of the Palestinian terrorism, and a chief propagandist of Islamism through its media powerhouse, Al Jazeera, which reaches 430 million people in more than 150 countries. Key members of Qatar's royal family have made their admiration for Islamism and Hamas specifically very clear. Sheikha Moza bint Nasir, the mother of Qatar's emir and the chairperson of an educational nonprofit funneling millions into American schools, praised the mastermind of the October 7th massacre, Yahya Sinwar. He will live on, she wrote on X after his death last year, and they will be gone. So you have to pay for the rest of this, and I really don't care to, and I think it kind of makes the point pretty clear here. So yeah, these people are just not serious people. Like I said, Qatar shouldn't be spending all this money in our domestic politics, but there's clearly one more actor that has had much more influence over our elections than the other. And it's not Qatar. Qatar doesn't have speech laws in 38 countries. There aren't resolutions being passed almost daily denouncing anti-Qatar bigotry, or anti-Qatari bigotry, however you would say it. Qatar doesn't have, you know, an automatic $4 billion going to themselves every year, no matter what. But Israel has all those things. Kind of hard to argue that Qatar is the big bad boogeyman when Israel's doing all this stuff. So I guess to kind of round out the show here, I'll keep it under an hour so you guys can get out and have a great rest of your evening. Do I think Trump is shaking up things in the Middle East? Right now, it seems like there's a lot of noise, but if I'm being honest, I'm pretty skeptical that that is the case. I hope so, but I think that this is going to kind of be like the Ukraine deal where it sounds really good. He berates him and then is back to business as usual. But maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. Anyways, I hope you guys really, really enjoyed today's show. Please please consider becoming a channel member. Shout out to B, Abrogate D's, and then Alex Patino for being channel members for the lowly price of $2.99 a month, where you can see all of Common Crown's footage. Please, please, please consider becoming a channel member. I'd really, really appreciate that. Like I said, you could see all of a Common Crown's footage. I'm contemplating changing up the way I do the podcast, and maybe I'll talk with some people and maybe throw it out to you guys and see what you guys think about it. But anyways, I think that's all I got. I think it's going to be business as usual, but if it's not, you can always tune in here and I'll give you the news and we'll talk about it a little bit more. Please subscribe, like, share, leave me a review on all podcatchers. Go to tigerfitness.com, use code Kyle at checkout, super chat if you feel so inclined, and leave a like on the way out. And like I said, if you're not subscribed, please subscribe. Thank you guys so much for tuning in today. Hopefully this was fun. Hopefully it was educational. And until next time, everybody, take care.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
With Robinhood, not only can you trade individual stocks and ETFs, you can also seamlessly buy and sell crypto at low costs. Trade all in one place. Get started now on Robinhood.
Trading crypto involves significant risk. Crypto trading is offered through an account with Robinhood Crypto LLC. Robinhood Crypto is licensed to engage in virtual currency business activity by the New York State Department of Financial Services. Crypto held through Robinhood Crypto is not FDIC insured or SIPC protected. Investing involves risk, including loss of principal. Securities trading is offered through an account with Robinhood Financial LLC, member SIPC, a registered broker-dealer.